This is the TTY Dialer, episode 41, for the week of August 7th through August 12th. Hi there, this is your weekly companion to WRVO's nightly old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark LeBonier. Every night of the week, you can hear comedy, westerns, drama, mystery, romance, science fiction, and much more, all from the golden age of radio from 10 to midnight, live on the air, or as we stream it live as it is played at WRVO.org. In this podcast, on a weekly basis, I bring you radio history, fun with sound from radio's yesteryear, and a look at the shows coming up for the week.
But first, listen to a woman's viewpoint.
Mister, is that Menon skin bracer you have on?
Mm-hmm. Like it?
Like it? I love it. That's the famous aftershave lotion that wows the ladies. I hope you'll use it after every shave.
That just gives you a rough idea, men, how the gal in your life will say your face is nice to be close to when you use Menon Skin Bracer. Get a bottle today. Pour some in your hand and splash it on your face. Feel its wake-up tingle. See how this soothing lotion helps relieve aftershave burn. Notice how it helps heal tiny razor nicks. See how fresh, cool, and comfortable it makes you feel. Helps give you that young, alert look that spells success. Today, get Menon Skin Bracer.
How you'll wow the ladies. Try it and see.
And to keep presentable longer, use Menon Shaving Cream.
And that was a commercial for a series syndicated by the Menon Company itself, at least that's what it said on the transcription disc, called Fun at Breakfast, that featured comedians Tom Howard and George Shelton telling jokes in front of a studio audience in a five-minute spot. A place where many morning hosts could take a quick coffee break as the disc played. This was a bit new at the time in 1946, as live radio was not becoming a thing of the past necessarily, but for years, pre-recorded material had been frowned upon, and this series marked among the start of a post-war boom in syndicated programs and audience tolerance of them. I know it's hard to imagine now, but there was a time when people considered it quite strange and disingenuous to play recorded material that wasn't music on the air. Now, in terms of the Menon brand, at the time they were selling with the help of the Dwayne Jones Advertising Agency, which ended up being part of one of the most well-known lawsuits in advertising, as the executives there had threatened Jones himself to sell the agency to them or they would leave, which they ended up doing. Nearly 80 employees left, taking many clients and millions of dollars with them, including the Menon line of products that was brought up during the court case, revealing that they were paying the Dwayne Jones Agency over $1 million a year. That's about $9 million today, to keep their name in magazines and on the air. And with the Menon Company sponsoring the syndicated series, one of the big selling points of it is that your advertisement lives on. There's really no expiration date. Although with the handling and playback by many different radio stations of the same discs of the Menon's aftershave show, they probably took on a few nicks that a little piece of tissue couldn't help. Coming up this Monday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, it's an hour of comedy with People Are Funny from 1954.
Then you come over and you hand the person this beautiful antique lamp like this. Here, take it. You dropped it.
You dropped it.
Yeah, I dropped it, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
This is what we want you to do, see? I have some more lamps like this one.
Well,
now, you're going to have them in the back of the car. And you're going to take one of the lamps at a time, and you're going to go up to these doors, see? And you're going to say what I told you, that you've got the present. And as they reach out for the lamp, you drop it, just like I did. And it smashes into bits right on the porch in front of them. In other words, there are two basic emotions inside the mind of this person at the door. They're happy and grateful to you for being honest enough to bring their present over, and then they're madder than heck because you just busted it in front of them.
I see.
Now, the question is, will they bust you?
After that, the Bob Hope Show with special guest Gracie Allen from 1952. Then at 11 this Monday night, True History with That Was the Year, profiling 1907, and the full broadcast of the I Am an American one-off show. You might recall from several podcasts ago me profiling that. This Tuesday night, August 8th at 10, it's drama from the Philip Morris Playhouse, then the Encore Theater, followed by crime at 11. It's a two-parter from Counterspy called The Cold-Blooded Professor. These shows you can hear Monday, August 7th, and Tuesday, August 8th from 10 to midnight on TuneT Yesterday. Again, it's live on the air, or you can stream it live as we play them at WRVO.org. The actor who would swing into the ears of listeners as Tarzan was born this Tuesday, August 8th in 1900. James Pierce was the first to play the Lord of the Jungle in Tales of Action and Thrills on the Air, and he grew up in Freedom, Indiana. And as he made his way through school, he ended up playing football as a center for the Hoosiers with the nickname of Big Jim. He moved on to Arizona, where he ended up coaching high school football and took up acting in his spare time. And from there, he moved to high school coaching in Glendale, California, where he would end up coaching future Hollywood star John Wayne. While there, he was invited to a party being thrown by Tarzan creator Edgar Rice Burroughs from his daughter Joan. And after Edgar and Jim got talking, he asked if he would be interested in acting as Tarzan in the movies. The character was already widely known from novels and newspaper comic strips, and Jim quickly said yes. And then he dropped his coaching job as well as another acting gig he had lined up, playing a cadet in the movie Wings. That part eventually going to Gary Cooper, making it one of his early Scream triumphs, and Jim kept true to his contract by playing a smaller role. But in 1927, Tarzan and the Golden Lion, a silent film, was the movie he focused on, and the movie he himself panned after critics got a hold of it, saying,
"Because of poor direction, terrible story treatment, and putrid acting, the opus was a stinkeroo. I emerged with nothing to show for my strenuous effort, except being typecast as Tarzan."
Even though he felt that way at the time and a little bit later in life, it cemented Pierce into film history and, of course, into the Tarzan family in more ways than one. Tarzan's creator always kept close to any adaptations of his work, and when the chance for the radio series happened in 1932, Edgar Rice Burroughs wanted Jim to play Tarzan, and his daughter Joan, now married to Jim, to play the role of Jane on the air. Which they did, three times a week for 2 years in 15-minute serialized shows, among the first radio in that kind of format. The radio show actually premiered at the Fox Pantages Theater in Hollywood, with an episode played through the speakers and the cast of the show on the stage, celebrating another version of the adventures of one of the world's most unique characters. Here's some sound from one of the broadcasts from the summer of 1934.
In the great ceremonial hall of the Temple of Ma-Chu, the Atef Suten and his Council of 13 are preparing to unveil the Hesiharian talisman, the Father of Diamonds. Round the walls of the vast chamber are seated the Hesiharian nobles. Helen Gregory and Magra are brought in. They stand before the high priest with the Atef and his favorite as the ceremony begins. Tarzan, Darno, and Tom have escaped from the chamber of death, and rushing into the vast hall, stop the ceremony. Suten pronounces the dread decree of the Council of 13. It is that Tarzan must fight the greatest of the prehistoric talking apes. The ferocious brute, a fearsome monster, climbs out of the pit. Swinging forward clumsily but swiftly, the hideous features contorted with black rage, the brute roars out his challenge. Back, Donald! Home! With another blood-curdling scream, the ape approaches Tarzan and thrusts out its hairy arms.
Don't do something! Help him!
With the speed of Sheeta the leopard, Tarzan turns. His fist flashes out and catches monster squarely on the jaw. The huge brute pauses, stunned. Tarzan whips out his knife.
He is bigger and stronger than all the others.
As Darno shouts, the shaggy ape, with gleaming fangs bared, rushes forward. Tarzan crouches low, awaits the charge. As the huge beasts come close, the ape man springs straight into the embrace of those great arms. The deadly knife flashes once, twice, again. Killed deep into the awesome monster's heart. Before the hairy arm can close about him, Tarzan slips out of their crushing embrace, leaps high, great back. A muscular arm encircles the mighty throat, pulls the great head back, back. Once more, the keen blade sinks home into the jugular vein. A fountain of blood wells up from the death wound. Slowly, the ape sinks to the marble floor. One last muscular convulsion, the giant hulk is lifeless.
On your chest.
Not mine, Magra.
Now, Suten, we'll talk.
Verily, O Tarzan of the Apes, thou art a mighty man in battle.
I would that thou...
Mon Dieu! Look! Kira! With a great military escort!
And do you see what those men before her are carrying? Father of Diamonds.
Helen, Margaret, come down here with us.
Tarzan, that woman is wicked. I feel it. There is much trouble in store for us.
Silence, Margaret, else Tira will hear thee.
Ake men shot, marchu. Cat! Silence. The people of Hesihair have seen the golden disk in which lieth the Father of Diamonds. They know it is now mine. With it, I become all-powerful in the land of the Hesihair.
Today is an evil day for thee and thy friends, and for me, Tarzan of the Apes. The Atef was a just, though stern man. This woman, Tira, hath a black heart. I fear for thee.
Beneath my rule, the land of Hesihair shall prosper greatly. My word shall be law.
Thou art mad, woman. The story of the rulers of Hesihair stands written in the priestly books. Never hath woman ruled alone.
I shall cause to be burned the sacred writings. Senatuaki Hetepu Kessa. Surround these men and women, God.
Poor Lawson was right, Tarzan. This woman has an evil eye.
So long as she offers no harm to Helen and Magra, we'll wait and watch.
Look, guards surrounding the king. This Tira seems to be in earnest.
Until I have decided what thy fate shall be, Suten, thou shalt be prisoner in thine own chamber.
Thou darest not. The people of Hesihair will rise against thee.
This Wednesday, August 9th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday, an hour of adventure from suspense with the play Death of an Old Flame, then High Adventure from 1950. Broadway is at 11 o'clock Wednesday with the Theater Guild adapting A Doll's House. This Thursday, August 10th at 10, Horror from the Hermit's Cave and Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre. At 11 o'clock, Science Fiction from Dimension X and X-1.
I still love you, but I'm fed up.
Now, what is it, Charlotte?
We're not young anymore. Fred tells me you've bought into a bankrupt engineering firm, sunk every nickel in it.
Well, they own the Schwarzmiller fuel injector patents. I need them.
How many times do we have to start over? I'm tired. I'm not asking for millions. Just a little life for the two of us.
Listen into these shows, if you can, Wednesday, August 9th and Thursday, August 10th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. The Oscar-winning actor Clark Gable, whose credits included the role of Rhett Butler, of course, in Gone with the Wind, and Peter Wayne in 1934's It Happened One Night, which brought the Academy Award, had an on-screen reputation as authoritative while being a debonair ladies' man, and was known for a long time as the King of Hollywood. But tragedy struck one of the movie's most beloved stars in 1942 when his actress wife, the revered Carol Lombard, died in a plane crash while on her way back to Encino, California, after attending a war bond drive in Indiana. Taking into account the shock of her death and the foreboding nature of her last correspondence with him, which in part read,
"Pappy, you'd better get in this man's army."
It makes sense that the 41-year-old Gable wanted to get out of Hollywood for a time and join the war effort, which he promptly did after wrapping up a war film he was working on, where he played a correspondent. After taking some time off to grieve, he joined the Army Air Corps as a private this Saturday, August 12th in 1942. And exactly 1 year later, NBC Radio assigned reporter Don Hollenbeck to interview the now Captain Clark Gable to get a movie actor's take on the goings-on overseas in what sounds like a pre-planned or scripted conversation, most likely due to the restrictions of the Office of War Information that clamped down on extraneous details that could tip the Axis enemy to troop positions and plans. So here's some sound from that interview in a rare type of program and certainly a unique radio appearance for Clark Gable, broadcast on August 12, 1943.
The National Broadcasting Company takes you now to England for a special broadcast by Captain Clark Gable, United States Army Air Force.
This is Don Hollenbeck speaking from a heavy bomber station of the United States 8th Army Air Force somewhere in England. You know what this 8th Air Force has been doing to Hitler's European prison by day, adding its weight and increasing force to the mighty blows of the Royal Air Force at night. You know, too, of those sentences in the communiques that say, "Despite heavy opposition by enemy fighters, the flying fortresses and the liberators got through, put their bombs squarely on the target, precision bombing that has no equal. But those forts and libs, would never have got to their targets if it weren't for teamwork. Pilots, bombardier, navigator, radio man, and the gunners who engage in fierce aerial duels with the fighters the enemy sends up to stop them. Up to tonight, 8th Air Force gunners have shot down more than 990 German planes since last August when we got into this air war. These men handle the 50 caliber guns in sub-zero temperatures. But there are three of them here now to tell you something about their job. The name of one of them you know, Captain Clark Gable.
And the names of the other two you should know, because they've done what I've only seen on one trip in a flying fortress to Antwerp. Meet the first gunner, Sergeant Thomas Hansberry, 23 years old, of Philadelphia. He shot down two FWs, two MEO-109s, and damaged two other FWs. For that, he wears the Distinguished Flying Cross. Tom enlisted December the 8th, 1941, when a lot of other young Americans went to war. He's been on the required number of missions. He's earned the rest. From now on, Tom will be on the ground, teaching other gunners the things he's learned in those many brushes with death as a tail gunner in a flying fortress. The real hot spot, isn't it, Tom?
Hot and cold up there at the same time, Captain Gable.
And now, another gunner. This time with a group I'm assigned to. Sergeant Philip Hall, 20 years old, of Springfield, Missouri. His dad's a Protestant minister. Phil has always wanted to be a sky pilot, too. A real flyer. He enlisted just a year ago. Went to gunnery school at Harlingen, Texas, where he led his class of 142 men. Phil is a top turret gunner. He's only been on three missions, but on those three missions, he's seen a lot. Enough to know that after you get through with the training courses back in America, as thorough as they are, you've got a lot more to learn about war in the air. Is that right, Phil?
No kidding about that, Captain Gable. To learn about war in the air, you've got to go to war in the air. That's what I'm doing now. I'm after my Bachelor of Gunnery degree by shooting it out with the Huns.
Here's to a graduation with honors, Phil. Captain Gable, a lot of people back home are interested in knowing more about the job you're doing here in England at this bomber station.
Well, it starts from the day I came into the Army as a private, August 12, 1942. First, they taught me how to be a soldier. Then I went to the Officer's Candidate School at Miami, learned how to be an officer. And next, to the gunnery school at Tyndall Field in Florida, where I learned how to be a gunner on a flying fortress. Then I flew to England with a crew of Air Force cameramen assigned to a bomb group. And here's where our real job begins. We're in the graduate school of gunnery now, learning it in combat, and trying to report what we learn in a form that will help the gunners back home to know what to expect when they go out on their first mission.
All right, what can they expect? What are some of the things you've picked up in the higher art of gunnery?
I can tell you a lot of things, Don, but most of them would be secondhand information. I've only been on one mission so far, to Antwerp, and I went on that one as an observer, not as a gunner.
This Friday night, August 11th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday, Westerns with Death Valley Days and the Frontier Gentlemen. Then a fan favorite here on the show, it's sitcoms with The Great Gildersleeve at 11 o'clock and Burns and Allen from 1949. And a Saturday night, True History with the Then and Now show, then the Globe Theater from 1945, followed by Horror, Edge of Your Seat Radio this Saturday night from Quiet Please and Suspense.
I'll report you for this.
You will, huh?
I was going to smash your window so we could get out of here.
Oh, yeah?
Sure. What did you think I... Oh, so that's it, huh?
Here's the rope, driver.
Now, look here. Wait a minute. You can't do this. You can't tie me up, you fools. I'm not Killer Greg.
Maybe he isn't.
Maybe. But like that guard said, we can't take chances.
So if you can, listen to these shows that are on the air Friday, August 11th and Saturday, August 12th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. And that's going to do it for this 41st podcast of the TTY Dialer. I'd like to say thanks a lot to station manager Bill Drake, who voiced Tarzan earlier, and Leah Landry, producer here at the station, who was the voice of Carol Lombard's correspondence. And speaking of which, if you have any questions for me or comments at all about Tune to Yesterday or the TTY Dialer, get a hold of me and let me know. My email address is mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. And thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoy the shows coming up this week on Tune to Yesterday. I'll be back with another TTY Dialer next week.